In the bosom of one of those spacious coves which indent the eastern shore of the Hudson River, there lies a small village known by the name of Tarrytown. And not far from this place, there's a little valley, one of the quietest places in the whole world, called Sleepy Hollow. A drowsy, dreamy influence seems to hang over the land. Some say that the place was bewitched. And indeed, the people there, descendants of early Dutch settlers, are given to all kinds of marvelous beliefs, are subject to trances and visions, and frequently see strange sights and hear music and voices in the air. The whole neighborhood abounds with local tales, haunted spots, and twilight superstitions. The dominant spirit, however, that haunts this enchanted region and seems to be commander-in-chief of all the powers of the air is the apparition of a figure on horseback without a head. Some folks say
it's the ghost of a Hessian trooper. His head was carried away by a cannonball during one of the battles of the Revolutionary War. Oh, I've seen him, I tell you, hurrying along in the gloom of night as if on the wings of the wind. I warrant he's out searching for his head. Last time I saw him, he was going fast as the wind, rushing, I reckon, to get back to the graveyard at the church before daybreak. We call him the Headless Horseman of Sleepy Hollow.
Now, there lived a long time ago in Sleepy Hollow a worthy fellow named Ichabod Crane. He sojourned there for the purpose of instructing the children of Sleepy Hollow. He was tall, but exceedingly lank, with narrow shoulders, long arms and legs, hands that dangled a mile out of his sleeves, feet that might have served for shovels, and his whole frame most loosely hung together. His head was small and flat atop, with huge ears, large green glassy eyes, and a long snipe nose, so that it looked like a weathercock upon his spindle neck to tell which way the wind blew. He was a conscientious teacher, but the revenue arising from his school was small, scarcely sufficient to furnish him with daily bread, for he was a huge eater. However, to add to his income, he became the singing master of the neighborhood too, and instructed the young folks in singing psalms, and he picked up many a bright shilling this way. Now, the schoolmaster is generally a man of some importance in the female circle of a rural community, so Ichabod was happy in the smiles of all the country damsels. His appearance was always greeted with satisfaction, for he was esteemed as a man of great knowledge, for he had read several books straight through, and was a perfect master of Cotton Mather's book, History of New England Witchcraft, in which, by the way, he most firmly believed. In fact, his appetite for superstitious tales and his powers of digesting them were equally extraordinary. No tale was too gross or monstrous for his capacious appetite. One of his sources of fearful pleasure was to pass long winter evenings with the old Dutch wives and listen to their marvelous tales of ghosts and goblins and haunted places, and particularly of the Headless Horseman of Sleepy Hollow. At the end of such an evening, he would be warned...
Now mind your step, Ichabod Crane, and get yourself home quick.
But if there was pleasure in hearing these tales, it was dearly purchased by the terrors of his subsequent walk homeward. What fearful shapes and shadows beset his path. Oh, those shrubs covered with snow like a sheeted specter. How often did he shrink at the sound of his own step on the frosty crust beneath his feet. How he dreaded to look over his shoulder. And how often he was thrown into complete dismay by some rushing blast howling among the trees, thinking it was the galloping headless horseman. All these, however, were mere terrors of the night. Daylight put an end to all these evils. And Ichabod would have passed a pleasant life in spite of the devil and all his works if his path had not been crossed by a being that causes more perplexity to mortal man than ghosts and goblins and the whole race of witches put together. And that was a woman. Among the musical disciples who assembled one evening each week to receive his instructions in psalm singing was the daughter and only child of a wealthy Dutch farmer. Her name was Katrina Van Tassel. She was a blooming lass of 18, plump as a partridge, ripe and melting and rosy-cheeked as one of her father's peaches, and universally famed not merely for her beauty, but her vast expectations. She was also a bit of a coquette. Ichabod Crane had a soft and foolish heart toward the female sex, and it is not to be wondered at that so tempting a morsel soon found favor in his eyes, more especially after he visited her in her paternal mansion and saw the large degree of abundance that surrounded her. From the moment Ichabod laid eyes upon these regions of delight, the peace of his mind was at an end, and his only study was how to gain the affections of old Van Tassel's lovely daughter and heiress. In this enterprise, however, he had real difficulties. The most formidable of these was a burly, roaring, roistering blade by the name of Brom Van Brunt, the hero of the country round, which rang with his feats of strength and hardihood. Brom was broad-shouldered, with short, curly black hair, and a bluff but not unpleasant countenance. From his size and strength, he had received the nickname of Brom Bones. He was always ready for a fight or a frolic, but on the whole had more mischief than ill will in his composition. Sometimes he and three or four boon companions would ride wildly past the farmhouses at night, and some old dame, startled out of her sleep, would angrily exclaim,
"Aye, there goes that wild Brom Bones and his gang! They ought to be put in the stocks!"
And when any madcap prank or rustic brawl occurred in the vicinity, someone was sure to say,
"Brom Bones is at the bottom of it, you can be sure."
Now, for some time, Brom Bones had singled out the blooming Katrina for the object of his uncouth gallantries, and though his amorous toyings were something like the gentle caresses and endearments of a bear, yet it was whispered about that Katrina did not altogether discourage his hopes. Such was the formidable rival with whom Ichabod Crane had to contend. To have taken the field openly against his rival would have been madness for Ichabod, because Brom was not a man to be thwarted in his love affairs. Ichabod, therefore, made his advances to the desirable young lady in a quiet manner. Under cover of his character of singing master, he made frequent visits to Katrina. From the moment Ichabod began to press his suit with her, the interests of Brom Bones declined. His horse was no longer tied at Katrina's door on Sunday nights, as it had been, and a deadly feud gradually arose between him and the schoolmaster of Sleepy Hollow. And then one fine autumn afternoon, Ichabod was invited to attend a merrymaking, or a quilting frolic, to be held that evening at Katrina Van Tassel's. Ichabod turned his school loose an hour before the usual time. He spent at least half an hour brushing his best and only suit, and that he might make his appearance before his mistress in the true style of a cavalier, he borrowed a horse from the farmer with whom he lived. It was a gaunt, shaggy animal who possessed but one good eye, a broken-down plow horse named Gunpowder. And thus gallantly mounted, Ichabod issued forth like a knight-errant in quest of adventure.
Giddy-up, Gunpowder! Giddy-up!
Toward evening, Ichabod arrived at his destination. The sumptuous Van Tassel mansion was thronged with old farmers, their wives and children, lads and lasses, in festive air, and the hero of the scene was Brom Bones, having come to the gathering on his favorite steed called Daredevil, a creature like himself, full of mettle and mischief. But while the throng was singing his praise, his rival Ichabod danced off with the lady of his heart, who smiled graciously in reply to all his amorous oglings. Brom Bones, seeing this, and sorely smitten with love and jealousy, sat brooding by himself in one corner. Now, when the dance was at an end, Ichabod was attracted to a group of folks who, with old Van Tassel, were gossiping and telling tales of ghosts and apparitions. And the chief part of these dismal stories turned upon the favorite specter of Sleepy Hollow, the headless horseman, who had been heard several times of late patrolling the country. In fact, one townsman, who did not at all believe in ghosts, said,
"But I tell you for true, I met the horseman returning from a trip into Sleepy Hollow. He came up behind me as I galloped along over hill and swamp until I reached the bridge, not far from the churchyard, when all of a sudden, the headless horseman turned into a skeleton and threw me into the brook and sprang away over the treetops with a clap of thunder.
And then Brom Bones drew into the group and matched this fantastic story with a marvelous adventure of his own.
I was returning one night from a neighborhood village when I was overtaken by the headless horseman. But just as we came to the church bridge, he bolted and vanished in a flash of fire.
Flash of fire!
All of these tales sank deep in the mind of Ichabod Crane. When the party broke up, only Ichabod lingered behind to have a few private words with Katrina, fully convinced that he was now on the high road to success with her. Something, however, must have gone wrong. Because now, when they were alone, Katrina was no longer responsive to his advances and seemed to want to be rid of him. So after no very great interval, he went forth from the house with an air quite desolate and chopfallen. Oh, these women. Was her encouragement of the poor pedagogue all a mere sham to secure the conquest of her rival? Heaven only knows, not I. Anyway, without looking to the right or left to notice the scene of rural wealth on which he had so often gloated, he went straight to the stable and with several hearty cuffs and kicks, roused his steed most uncourteously.
Wake up there! Wake up there, I say, Gunpowder! Wake up! Giddy up!
It was the very witching time of night that Ichabod, heavy-hearted and crestfallen, pursued his travel homeward along the sides of the lofty hills which rise above Tarrytown. In the dead hush of midnight, as he rode along on Gunpowder, all the stories of ghosts and goblins that he had heard that evening now came crowding upon Ichabod's recollection. The night grew darker. As he approached a tree whose limbs were gnarled and fantastic in the darkness, he began to whistle. Then he thought with a start that his whistle was answered. It was but a blast sweeping through the dry branches. All at once he heard a groan. His teeth chattered and his knees smote against the saddle. Then he saw that it was but the rubbing of one big bough upon another as they were swayed by the breeze. He passed the tree in safety, but new perils lay before him. He approached a rude bridge of logs spanning a small brook. The stream had always been considered haunted. As he approached it, his heart began to thump. He summoned up, however, all his resolution, gave his horse half a score of kicks in the ribs, and attempted to dash briskly across the bridge. But instead of starting forward, the perverse old animal made a lateral movement and ran broadside against the fence. Ichabod, in fear, jerked the reins on the other side and kicked lustily with his other foot. It was all in vain. His steed plunged to the opposite side of the road into a thicket of brambles and alder bushes. Just at this moment, a sound caught the sensitive ear of Ichabod. In the dark shadow of the grove, on the margin of the brook, he beheld something huge, misshapen, black, and towering. It stirred not, but seemed gathered up in the gloom like some gigantic monster, ready to spring upon the traveler. Ichabod cried out,
"Who are you?"
He received no reply. Ichabod's hair stood on end with terror. Just then, the shadowy object bounded into the middle of the road. But the night was dark. The form of the figure could be seen. He appeared to be a horseman of large dimensions, mounted on a black horse of powerful frame. Now he came alongside Gunpowder and jogged along beside him. Ichabod quickened his steed. The stranger quickened his horse to an equal pace. Ichabod pulled up and fell into a walk. The other did the same. Ichabod's heart began to sink within him. He tried to sing, but could not utter a sound. And then, on mounting a piece of rising ground, which brought the figure of his fellow traveler in relief against the sky, Ichabod was horror-struck. The figure was headless. But Ichabod's horror was still more increased on observing that the head, which should have rested on the figure's shoulders, was carried before him on the pommel of the saddle. Ichabod's terror rose to desperation. He rained a shower of kicks and blows upon Gunpowder, hoping by a sudden movement to give his companion the slip. But the specter started full jump with him, and they dashed through thick and thin, stones flying and sparks flashing at every bound. Now they reached the road that turns off to Sleepy Hollow, but Gunpowder, who seemed possessed with a demon, made an opposite turn and plunged headlong downhill to the left. The goblin was hard on his haunches, and Ichabod had much to do to maintain his seat. The church now loomed ahead. Before it, the bridge, the place he recollected where Brom Bones' ghostly competitor had disappeared. Ichabod said to himself,
"If I can reach that bridge, I'm safe."
Then old Gunpowder sprang upon the bridge and gained the opposite side. But at that very moment, he heard the black steed panting and blowing close behind him, and he felt its hot breath upon him. Ichabod quickly cast a look behind, just in time to see the goblin rise in his stirrups and with a fierce motion hurl his head at him. Ichabod endeavored to dodge the horrible missile, but too late. It encountered his cranium with a tremendous crash. And he was tumbled headlong into the dust, while Gunpowder, the black steed, and the goblin rider passed by like a whirlwind. The next morning, the old horse was found without his saddle and with the bridle under his feet, soberly cropping the grass at his master's gate. Ichabod did not make his appearance at breakfast. The dinner hour came, but no Ichabod. The boys assembled at the schoolhouse, but no schoolmaster. An inquiry was set afoot, and after diligent investigation, the searchers at last came upon his traces. In one part of the road leading to the church, his saddle was found trampled in the dirt. Beyond, on the bank of the brook where the water ran deep and black, they found the hat of the unfortunate Ichabod Crane, and close beside it, a shattered pumpkin. The brook was searched, but the body of the schoolmaster was not to be discovered. The mysterious event caused much speculation at the church on the following Sunday. The townsfolk shook their heads and came to the conclusion that Ichabod had been carried off by the headless horseman. It is true that an old farmer who had been down to New York on a visit several years later brought home the intelligence that Ichabod Crane was still alive, that he had left the neighborhood partly through fear of the goblin and of the man from whom he had borrowed his horse, and partly in mortification at having been suddenly dismissed by the heiress, Katrina Van Tassel, that he had changed his quarters to a distant part of the country, had kept school and studied law at the same time, had been admitted to the bar, turned politician, electioneered, written for the newspapers, and finally had been made a justice of the court. Brom Bones, who shortly after his rival's disappearance conducted the blooming Katrina in triumph to the altar, was observed to look exceedingly knowing whenever the story of Ichabod was related, and always burst into a hearty laugh at the mention of the pumpkin, which led some to suspect that he knew more about the matter than he chose to tell. The old country wives, however, who are the best judges of these matters, maintain to this day that Ichabod was spirited away by supernatural means. And it is a favorite story often told about the neighborhood round the winter evening fire. The bridge became more than ever an object of superstitious awe. The schoolhouse soon fell to decay and was reported to be haunted by the ghost of the unfortunate pedagogue. And the plowboy loitering homeward of a still summer evening has often fancied his voice at a distance, chanting a melancholy psalm tune among the tranquil solitudes of Sleepy Hollow.